From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Near East Ridge.
Sunset. East Side. San Francisco. Border of Milpitas.
San Jose.
Coming up, we'll hear about some unintended consequences of Oakland's new minimum wage law.
We are not talking about only the business owners closing shop. We are talking about so many employees that are losing jobs.
Then, what will it take to enforce the new law?
Even businesses that I know have been informed may still be claiming that they're not aware.
And we'll follow the debate even farther up the chain.
Oakland is very proud to be part of what is a national movement to raise the minimum wage.
The Bay Area's ongoing minimum wage fight, coming up on Cross Currents. Earlier this month, the city of Los Angeles made history, becoming the largest city in the U.S. to raise its minimum wage to $15 an hour from the current $9.
And let's not forget why we set off on this path to begin with. The effort came from our belief that our hardest working men and women deserve to earn a wage that allows them to survive and thrive in Los Angeles. I'm confident that this policy will help that to occur.
Now the county of Los Angeles is considering matching that. And last November, Oakland residents voted to increase the minimum wage to $12.25 an hour. Since the new law went into effect in March, some business leaders in Chinatown say it's been particularly tough on their neighborhood. Four restaurants and six grocery stores have shut their doors in the past 2 months, and even more are considering moving out. KALW's Jack Detch went to Chinatown to take a look at what's happening and to talk with some of the folks.
$3.25 won't buy you a lot in today's marketplace, but imagine what it might mean if you were a business owner in Oakland's Chinatown and you had to bump wages by that amount for every hour worked. You might be inclined to cut hours or raise prices. Now, advocates who supported the increase, like Timmy Liu, are checking in to see how business owners are doing. Liu is the civic engagement coordinator for the Asian Pacific Environmental Network.
Do you know where we're headed? Or am I?
We're going straight ahead that way, and then we'll cross over.
Fantastic.
We're off to Cafe Gabriella. It's a sandwich shop on the edge of the neighborhood. Looking around, there are pressures pushing up prices on rents and businesses everywhere. 5,000 new housing units are on the way, and they're not going to come cheap.
It's challenging. I was a restaurant rat growing up. I knew how challenging it was to pin all of these challenges onto a single policy, sort of masks the sort of challenges that small business owners have on a day-in and day-out basis.
Liu says the city needs to play a bigger role.
Right now, we just don't have the enforcement structures to make sure that businesses are following this law.
Still, Liu says Chinatown has unique advantages.
Chinatown has a tremendous amount of foot traffic. So I think, will there be challenges to business? Of course. And I think that's why it's important to support the businesses now as they make that transition.
Liu taps me on the shoulder and points out a small storefront with a green awning. There are a couple of diners there, sipping espressos outside.
We are at Cafe Gabriella. This is a cafe and sandwich shop on 10th and Broadway.
Penny Balgado started this cafe 5 years ago.
Pulled pork and a half salad. I need a half soup, right?
Yeah.
Are you eating here?
There you go.
I was born and raised in the Philippines, so I have a lot of influence, Filipino cooking. My mom, my grandma, my family just takes care of us through food. So I want to, express that care for people in the community through taking care of them through food.
Alright, just go find a seat. I'll let you know when it's ready, okay?
Alright.
Thank you.
For Balgado, who started off as a dishwasher, Oakland is the right place to do business, even with costs rising.
Oakland is a city, but it has a small town feel.
Cafe Gabriella had to increase its prices to keep up with the minimum wage. But Balgado says her workers are happier, and it shows.
When people are happy to work at a certain place, it reflects to the customers, it reflects on the food and the product, and it reflects on the bottom and the triple bottom line.
But it's never been easy to tend to the bottom line in Chinatown. Part of the reason why businesses here operate on a shoestring is a history of redlining and discrimination from lenders. Minimum wage advocates insist that the new law isn't an effort to clamp down on diverse businesses. But Carl Chan has seen the impacts differently. He's a local realtor and a member of the board of directors on Chinatown's Chamber of Commerce. He advocates for a gradual increase in the minimum wage.
Carl, it's nice to meet you.
Nice meeting you.
Chan takes me to see some of the businesses that have failed since the minimum wage took effect.
In front of us, there's a grocery store been here for, my God, I don't know for how many years.
He's talking about Sam Yik Market on 8th Street.
I talked to the owners. They have decided to close. We are not talking about only the business owners closing shop. We are talking about so many employees that are losing jobs.
Chan says it's not uncommon for businesses like this one to shutter in Chinatown, but they often return quickly.
We had business closed before, but just a matter of days or maybe a week or two, they will be reopened.
What makes this time so different?
The major difference is that the cost of doing business is so expensive and financing is not available.
And that's coming from Chan, who actually supports a minimum wage increase, just of a different kind.
I would like to see a regional minimum wage increase. So it's going to be not locally, but regionally, well-planned, and also possibly some exemption for some small businesses.
Without those concessions, it can be hard to survive. That was the case with Legendary Palace, a two-story banquet hall on 7th and Franklin Streets, on a prime corner in Chinatown.
So this is the restaurant I'm talking about, yeah.
In media reports, an attorney for the owners confirmed the increased minimum wage was one factor that drove the business towards closing and could discourage other businesses from coming to the neighborhood. For Chan, the personal element is the worst part.
This community is like a big family. So we lost a family member. So it is pretty sad.
When a restaurant closes, it's hard on this community. Now, it may also be a sign that businesses will have to change in order to survive. For Cross Currents, I'm Jack Detch in Oakland.
Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba. It's one thing to tell businesses they need to up their workers' pay, but how do you make sure they actually do it? More than 3 months after Oakland implemented its higher minimum wage, there are still job postings on Craigslist and other services advertising positions below the new $12.25 standard, some of them receiving dozens of applications. How is the city responding to this kind of confusion? KALW's Jen Chien spoke with Deborah Barnes, Oakland's manager for contracts and compliance, about keeping businesses honest in paying their workers the legal wage.
So how do you go about enforcing compliance with the new law? What is an average day like for you?
We have targeted certain areas across the city and prioritized those areas where we go block by block to businesses to make sure that they are aware of minimum wage, that they have the proper postings, that their employees are aware of the law, and they are aware of how to file a claim if they believe that it's if they're not being treated fairly. At this point, we have about five written claims. What we do is we know that there are there's pieces of information that show up on, you know, on the internet. They show up here and there, but we're not able to follow and pursue, or we're not going to follow and pursue until we have a formal complaint in writing. And then from there, we act upon that complaint by soliciting documents from the business, visiting the business, and interviewing employees, collecting check stubs, pay records, time cards, etc.
You mentioned targeting specific areas of the city for compliance. Which areas are those?
We are targeting areas where we know there is a high concentration of restaurant owners and small business operations, concentrated in areas like Chinatown. In fact, we started in Chinatown going block by block. We've been doing that now for about five weeks. And the the staff go out, Matt Behrens and Jasmine Guy go out. She speaks Chinese, and we speak to each of the businesses and find out from the employers if there are any issues or concerns or questions. And so we're targeting that. Our next target is the Fruitvale area, where we know there are a lot of restaurants and a lot of small businesses where there's the potential for wage workers not being paid at the right price. Mm-hmm. So that's how we're approaching it. I think we're taking every possible effort to inform. Even businesses that I know have been informed may still be claiming that they're not aware. So the extent to which that is occurring, I cannot tell you. But I can say that the city of Oakland has launched a massive concerted effort to reach all parties that we are able to reach.
What are the consequences for businesses for violations?
The Measure FF language is very limiting in what it allows us to do, and that is a $1,000 charge per complaint. So it's the extent to which a business can pay for that penalty is, I guess, the degree of the impact.
And do you think that is an adequate consequence?
When you're enforcing it, it's helpful to have an array of options available to you, because most complaints are, it's more important to handle them on a case by case basis, because each one is unique, and we should have a variety of options to exercise. But in this instance, we're rather limited to the penalty charge.
And what would that variety include if you had your druthers?
Oh, gosh. For example, debarment.
What does debarment mean?
It means that a company is no longer, will be prohibited from doing business with the city of Oakland.
I see.
And also, there are another option is to require that the company make up for the shortfall or errors, so that if an employee is underpaid for 5 hours, they have to pay that back in 1.5 times the value of the shortfall.
In the past few years, there's been a lot more attention paid to minimum wage increases around the country. Are you in touch with other cities about how they're dealing with their minimum wage increases?
We talk to San Francisco all the time. We know that there are a couple of things that we could do, that we are going to do, and that is to have contracts with nonprofits to help interview, help them fill out complaint forms, corroborate with us so that we can have a more direct grassroots reach. That's something that San Francisco does that I like. But they have a huge labor compliance unit of people, maybe as many as I have in my whole department, and they're really staffed to do intensive, aggressive outreach. Berkeley, for example, theirs is a very small operation, a one-man operation, and they seem to be doing pretty well. So we're trying to stay between what's the best-case scenario if you had all the resources in the world and a small staff where you have to be creative and dynamic in your approaches. So I think we stay somewhere between that, those two extremes.
That was Deborah Barnes, Oakland's manager for contracts and compliance, talking with KELW's Jen Sheehan. You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Though Oakland is certainly not the only city raising its minimum wage, it sees itself as a leader in the fight. Here's Mayor Libby Schaff.
Oakland is very proud to be part of what is a national movement to raise the minimum wage, to recognize that workers deserve to earn enough money to actually live where they work.
And other Bay Area cities are getting on board.
This is at least the third time City Council is discussing the minimum wage. And
last month, Emeryville's City Council voted unanimously to raise it.
Okay, roll call.
Councilmember Asher.
Aye.
Councilmember Donahue.
Yes.
Councilmember Martinez.
Aye.
Vice Mayor Davis.
Aye.
Mayor Atkin.
Aye.
Let's clap.
Right now, change is happening city by city, but is there a chance the minimum wage could increase on a regional level in the Bay Area? To discuss that, I'm joined now by KALW's Jack Detch, who's been speaking with boosters and opponents of that idea. Thanks for being here, Jack.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So in the past year, we've seen a handful of Bay Area cities raise the minimum wage. Where is this campaign going from here?
Well, Hanal, what's happening in the Bay Area is really part of a national push. The Service Employees International Union, the chief organizer of the San Francisco and Oakland campaigns, they've spent about $50 million on this nationally. Now, that's more than they spent on President Obama's 2008 campaign entirely.
So what are they hoping to accomplish?
So SEIU is calling this the Fight for 15. They're pushing fast food restaurants to pay $15 an hour. That's going to end up being the going rate for the minimum wage in San Francisco and Seattle by 2018, and LA will get there by 2020. The minimum wage is likely going to be something we'll hear about in the presidential campaign next year. Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton has already endorsed a $15 an hour minimum wage, and Elizabeth Alexander, the vice president of local SEIU 1021, told me that labor organizers feel they've already won the argument, and with the wind at their backs, they feel like they're going to press forward now.
This is a growing trend that we've won the argument on minimum wage, and that we're also looking at a city-by-city model, and also states, right? People are talking about there being a statewide minimum wage measure on the ballot next year.
So it really doesn't sound like they're 100% clear about the next steps, then.
Not exactly, no. SEIU and labor organizers are really putting their money in the Bay Area into an effort they're calling Raise the Bay. Now, that would replicate the Oakland model to other Bay Area cities. But doing this on a regional level has proven challenging.
How so?
Well, if you look at what Berkeley's Mayor Tom Bates tried to do last year, he tried to get a coalition of East Bay governments together to raise the minimum wage to about $12.82 an hour by 2017. Now, that didn't really get off the ground, and you can kind of see why, because even in a region like the East Bay, there's a tremendous amount of economic diversity between your Berkeleys and your Oaklands and your Fremonts and your Albanys on two different pages.
Mm-hmm.
So we could definitely see a city-by-city approach from here on out, particularly with how confident advocates of the minimum wage are with going to the ballot. That could happen particularly in retail centers with large concentrations of minimum wage workers. So you're looking at Hayward, Newark, potentially Corte Madera. But there are other places where political willpower emerges totally on its own. I mean, we saw that in Emeryville, and now we're seeing it in El Cerrito, where you have local Democratic clubs that are putting pressure on the city government to act on the minimum wage.
Okay, so that's kind of the city and regional. What about the state level? What's happening?
There's a bit more action over there. You have, on the state level, the minimum wage is going to increase to $10 an hour next year anyway. But legislators want to speed up that timeline, particularly Mark Leno, the Democrat from San Francisco, helped pass a bill in the state Senate earlier this month that would increase the minimum wage to $13 an hour by 2017. And that would also tax subsequent increases in the minimum wage directly to inflation. That's going to head to the Assembly sometime soon.
Okay, so could that then put added pressure on businesses like the ones we heard about in Oakland's Chinatown district? How can we expect them to respond?
Well, that's a really interesting question, and we don't know quite yet, because we only have anecdotal evidence, like some of the stuff we heard from Penny Balgado at Cafe Gabriella and Carl Chan earlier in the program. We're going to be playing a bit of a waiting game to find out how businesses are doing. It's only been 3 months since Oakland passed their minimum wage increase, so we kind of need a larger sample size on the city level and to get city statistics to figure out what's going on.
Okay, so what are the opponents saying?
Well, I talked with Michael Saltzman. He's a research director for the Employment Policies Institute. They opposed the Oakland minimum wage increase. And after surveying business owners in the wake of the hike, he's particularly worried about how customers might react.
I think the regional minimum wage solution that some who have proposed, it does not do away with the potential of for consequences from a higher minimum wage, because there's a whole other issue that business owners have to deal with in terms of whether their customers are willing to pay the higher price. That adds an additional risk.
Now, whether businesses would actually go through with threats to move or expand outside of the Bay Area, that's another story, and we're not sure whether that'll happen or not.
And it would be surprising given how popular this seems to be. The minimum wage measure passed with 82% of the vote in Oakland. The Emeryville City Council passed it unanimously, and San Francisco did it with an easy majority. So how did this become such a shoo-in?
Well, things weren't quite that simple in San Francisco to begin with. Mayor Ed Lee and the Chamber of Commerce really had to kind of compromise with SEIU-backed groups to figure out the approach for the minimum wage. And that was sort of the ballot measure that passed back in November. In Oakland, we saw, again, some complaints from restaurant owners who threatened to move or expand outside of the city. And although they have yet to do that, that's still going to be a looming threat to look at in the future. So keep in mind, the Bay Area is pretty different from other regions when we're talking about the minimum wage, because service industry lobbies aren't as powerful out here, and the big companies in the Bay Area, Apple, Facebook, Twitter, Google, they don't really oppose a higher minimum wage since they mostly employ people who don't make the minimum wage. They employ skilled workers that make six, even seven figures.
So we heard from the city of Oakland's Deborah Barnes about the enforcement component, but do we have a sense of what that would look like on a regional level?
Well, it seems like it's going to happen on the fly from here on out. Labor organizers are really focused on the political angle, focused on raising minimum wage, and they're pushing cities after they do that to step up. So for cities that don't have the resources of a San Francisco, that could mean having more of a community-based approach, getting neighborhood organizations and nonprofits to pair with civic enforcement measures to really solve the problem.
Okay, we'll be watching. Thank you, Jack.
Thank you so much.
That's KLW's Jack Detch. Now we want to hear what you see in your city. Support for a higher wage? Prices going up along with the wage? Or maybe you have a great idea for enforcement. Email us with your ideas at news@klw.org or post your ideas on our Facebook page at KALW. Because of you, we can proudly say we're listener-supported public radio. Our team includes Lisa Bartfy, Rachel Dornhelm, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Ted Muldoon, Emma Nobel, Jessica Plachik, Rafi Ronquillo, Stephen Short, and Todd Whitney. Today's show was produced by Jack Detch and engineered by Seth Samuel. The line producer was Audrey Dilling. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This is composer, guitarist, and vocalist B. Beeman. He's just back home from a tour of Great Britain. You can see him live at The Independent in San Francisco on Saturday night. It's a record release show, and doors open at 8:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
I jumped the first train I saw. It'll surely take me home. If I had